Okay, everybody, and today's we're going to talk a little bit about Siman Yonim of Tznius, and this is a very, very difficult sugya because there is so much mussar involved. It's very difficult when mussar gets mixed up with halacha because it's very, very almost impossible to figure out what is al pi din, what is chumrah, what is minhag, and of course, what happens is that the minhagim become the halacha. So if you try to ask yourself, like, what is the daraisa, like, what can you get away with, so to speak? Now, again, although the maisa, a person should not live his life on a vor b'dieved level, of course. On the other hand, to understand halacha, you need to know the absolute b'dievets, because that establishes the halachic obligation. And one can understand that Gedalim and Paiskim don't like to tell you what the real B'dievids are, because they want Klal Yisrael to live by a higher standard. But as a result, Als Talmud Torah, it's very, very difficult to get a clear picture as to what is the absolute Doraisas or even the absolute Rabbanans in all of these areas. So in a sense, although I understand the nature of Meshivim who want to push us to a higher standard, but in a sense it's very difficult to learn the sugya properly because you can never really find clear what is the absolute halacha. What's also going to be shver is that we're going to see that for various reasons that are not always so pashut, there are inconsistencies between the different strata of tznius, meaning we have the halachas of kol isha that has certain heterim that don't apply to yichud, and then we have heterim and yichud that don't apply to chibuk v'nishuk, different relatives and the like. And it's hard to make sense. Like, why are you mako in a din of kolisha when you don't apply the same leniency for chibuk v'nishuk and the like? So that's also going to be very, very difficult. So again, this is really a sugya ein lahem soif. You know, of course. Rabbi Falk, Rabbi Leo Falk of Lakewood, who's a very, 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 very chashuv of Paisei. Gateshead, right. And, you know, he wrote the book on Tznius, and many, many women, seminary girls, take it like Chafetz Chaim. You know, we have to learn, they're Kovei HaSedarim, and we have to learn a section in Rav Falk's book, you know, every day, you know, and the like. And, you know, of course, it's also known, though, that Rav Falk is obviously a very, 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 very big machmer in these halachas. Okay, but again, what am I going to say? I'm not going to make a speech, you know, it's good to be makel in these halachas. That's not the case either. But let me just be mocked him with the idea. And again, I'm sure you've heard this, and then the women have heard this, but they have to internalize it. That although tznius does have its manifestations in dress lengths and sleeve lengths and everything else, but ultimately tznius is also about an attitude that one has towards life, and it applies to men and women. Remember the famous, one of the most famous pesukim, even the Goyim know this pasuk, although they don't follow the pasuk, but the pasuk in Micha, the Navi Micha, Ma Hashem Elokecha Dereish Meimach, what does Hashem ask from you? Kiyim asais mishpat, to do justice, avas chesed, to love chesed, and the last one is chatsneya leches, im Hashem alekecha, to walk with Hashem with modesty and humility, chatsneya leches. So chatsneya leches doesn't say only women, and it doesn't say only sleeves. It's a certain attitude that you don't walk around with gaiva, you don't walk around emphasizing different parts of yourself, etc. So part of why, you know, girls sometimes go crazy, maybe not so much in the Haredi world, but certainly in the United States, the issue of tznius is a big, big psychological issue. The girls feel like they're prisoners, and they feel they're, that they can't express their personalities, and they feel crushed, and they feel destroyed. Because people are talking about skirts, this length, that length, that length, that length, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But if they would understand that tznius is a way of looking at your life and focusing on the pnimius instead of the chitzonius, and the levush is a hechi timtza, it's not like an end in and of itself, you know, they would understand that it's part of becoming a human being, part of becoming a shalem in avodas Hashem. So it is, again, Rav Folk's book is, again, he's a very, very chashuv person, but Rav Folk's book is almost a celebration of exactitude of chitzenius. You know, into the quarter inch here and there and there and there, and he goes through everything. He goes through colors and patterns, you know, he goes through, well, this pattern is not good because, etc., etc., etc. Okay, but I understand, but for some people that could drive them very, very crazy. And of course, there's a parallel, I'm digressing a little bit, there's a parallel in for men as well, not so much as sneers, but also we talk about, got to wear a black hat, you got to do that, and sometimes girls get confused for shidduchim, well, the chassan, you know, wears a brown hat, you know, can I go out with him, yeah, or he doesn't, I see he davened mincha without a jacket once. Again, not that that's proper, but still, you know, people will make or break shidduchim based on inyonim like this. By the way, an interesting thing I'll tell you now. I am a member of the Rabbinical Council of America, primarily for pension, not because of any hashkafa reasons. But they have a listserv, very interesting listserv. I'm not supposed to tell you because I'm sworn to secrecy, but I'll tell you one thing they circulated. That they asked the following shaila about, now this is so interesting, about a guy's going out with a girl on a date, and the girl like slips on the ice. So they were about to get engaged, and the guy was from Brisk, so he didn't help her up. He says, I can't help you out. So she broke off the shidduch like a week before the wedding. So they were debating chassid shaita. In fact, I'll talk about this, lamaisa lahalacha, you do pick her up, but okay, the seder. So one of the people responded, you know, you never know. In some circles, this was a test that Pumpakert, if he would have, the girl wants to see how firm the guy is, and Pumpakert, if he would have picked her up, she would have broken up the shidduch that way. So guys can't win, you know, they're going to be in trouble, they're going to be in trouble either way. Sometimes it's Badavka to show, you know, how firm you are, you know, oh, you're a modern Orthodox, you picked me up, okay, whatever it would be, yeah.
Is he
machmir
in halacha, or is it just that he's
ma'ariv
the hashkafa into the?
No. Well, number one, he's machmir in halacha, but number two, a lot of things he spends pages and pages on have nothing to do with halacha. For example, I'm not even such a bucky in women's dress as he is. He'll talk about stripes and spots and dots and polka dots. I mean, he really writes a whole fashion manual about dresses that are not sneezed. Now, that is no direct shaykhus to any halacha whatsoever. But he goes into colors and patterns and different things, combinations. You know, a black and white combination is not so good. All sorts of, I mean, that's not halacha at all. But okay, but I understand. But the emphasis is, since he's writing...
Does anyone put him in
chayrim? No. Why would they put him in chayrim?
Like the opposite extreme.
Well, it hasn't happened. As they say, the Sefer is very, very, very makubal, and as they say, it's almost mandatory reading in every seminary.
Isn't it perfect for girls that are being taught in such a manner anyways? They're not being told dress needs, they're being told this yes, this no, this yes, this no. So this is what they need.
Some people are comfortable. No. So some girls are very comfortable with that, but for other girls, you know, as they say, this rigid, you know, kind of code, they want to hear more of the Hashgafa, more of the Inyan. You know?
I think if he does write...
No, he does. He does in the beginning chapter, whatever. And he quotes from the Gra, very, very strong teaching, a very strong teaching. He says, B'shem, although I did not find the Gra, but he says, B'shem, the Gra, that Sneas for women is like Talmud Torah for men. And that's Ad Kedei Kach, how important the union of Sneas is. That's a tremendous, tremendous thing.
I heard it's cooking, B'shem.
Is what?
I heard it was cooking one.
Cooking is like how well, you know, again, the emesis. The emesis that the Gemara in Brachos says that the Iker Schar of women is the chizuk that they give for their sons and their husbands. Talmud Torah, so cooking could be a very big Pesach for that. You know, if a guy comes home and there's a nice hot supper waiting for him. Although I tell you, Rav Scheinberg used to tell mothers not to cook good food for their sons, because their sons get ragil in Tanugim, So when they come to yeshiva, you know, they're not going to be able to adjust. So he says, you know, give them bad food to begin with, and, you know, that way everything will be good. The Emes of the Altar of Kelim had a similar cheshbon. The Altar of Kelim, which was like a training ground for Musar, but people don't realize, people came to Kelim like it was like a high school, Yeshiva Katana. People came to Kelim like 13, 14, that's kind of remadrach them. So Kelim apparently, there were a lot of rich people, a lot of rich kids who came to Kelim. And sometimes the parents would, it was people who had their money, you know. So parents would often come and give special food packages. And he did not allow it. He did not allow either he didn't allow it at all, or anything you had to immediately share with everybody. So, you know, you didn't get anything more. But he gave an interesting cheshbon. He gave a very interesting cheshbon to the mother. So the mother said, well, what's the problem? I mean, we have the money. Why can't I give my child something extra? So he didn't say, he could have said, oh, it's taiva, it's gashmias, you have to be merachik yourself from taiva. You know, he could have said all of that. He didn't say that. He said like this. He said, if you can promise me that your son will always be able to live at this level, then go ahead. But life goes up and down and up and down and up and down. And if a person is ragil to only live with luxuries and taiva, he's not going to have the internal kaiches to adjust to life when it's difficult. It's a much deeper thought. It's not stam the idea, you know, taiva is no good. But it's the idea that, you know, life can change a lot. And therefore, when a person learns to be mistopic b'muat, he can adjust to whatever life brings his way. And that's an important demonstra. That's what he told the... Avadi, he held the other way also about taivas, he held that a person should not be rugged, like Rav Scheinberg said.
That's why Elazar Mazari's wife told him, well, before he became messy.
Yeah, what?
It's like having a beautiful glass or clay,
That's what she told him. But he said, it's kedai to have it as long as you can have
it. She's telling him not to get, you know...
Right. But that was different, of course, because that was Avodah Sakaydish. Right. And Mavela, he said, for that it's kedai, but for physical typhus, you know, not that way. By the way, in Kelim, they had all these, again, excuse me for digressing, but it's an interesting idea. In Kelim, they had all of these character-building exercises. Guys had to get up, man, and these are really for high school kids. Guys had to get up in the middle of the night for a 5-minute Seder. No shorter, no longer. 5 minutes. What's the pshat? Because that teaches them to be machshiv zman, because if you only have a 5-minute Seder, you can't really come 2 minutes late, because then you've killed most of the Seder, or almost most of the Seder. So the concept would be, they would be woken up like 11:45, and they have to be in the, whatever it is, they have to be in the Beis Medrash exactly at 12, otherwise there would be kenosis, and only for 5 minutes, then they went back to bed. Or in Kelim, there was a concept that you didn't look around during davening. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky actually was a bacher in Kelim for six months. So he comes to Kelim the first day, and it's Kriyas HaTorah, and the Gabbai doesn't see a Kohen, so the Gabbai calls up Yisrael. So Rav Yaakov saw Kohen walk in, so he goes over to the Gabbai and says, Kohen. So after davening, the Gabbai tells him, Yasher Koach, you have a kenas of whatever it was, a ruble. So he says, why do I have a kenas? He says, well, you're not supposed to look around who walks in and out. You know, that's the kind of the rule of the yeshiva. So Rav Yaakov said about Kelim later, he said, every person ought to go to Kelim for 6 months. And then he said, but no more. He said it drove him a little crazy because there were so many cheshbonos. Other things in Kelim was that after a tainus, they would serve fish with a lot of little bones in it. What's the pshat? Because after a tainus, a person tends to eat quickly. And they wanted to be meshaber, the idea of thinking, mesinos. Mesinos was the big thing of the Altar of Kelim. Take your time, be slow, don't, you know, rush into things. So there were all these techniques to be mechanech people. You know, Avelia Lapian, you know, Abdesser was from Kelim, all of the great Bali Musa, they went to other yeshivas later, but Kelim was the sheirish. In fact, even the Altar of Slobodka himself, although he developed a whole different shita, was a Talmud of the Altar of Kelim. The Altar of Kelim was really the senior Talmud of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the senior Talmud. So Rav Elie Lapian, who didn't learn by the altar, but learned in the second generation of Kelm.
Rashaz
is Rav Simcha Zissel. That's the altar of Kelm. The altar of Kelm is Rav Simcha Zissel of Kelm. Yes, that's the Rashaz. But Rav Elie Lapian learns by the son of the altar of Hirsch, of Tzvi Hirsch Brody. I don't know, for some reason, last names in Europe are all mixed up. So his name, the altar of Kelm's name was Simcha Zissel Ziv, but his children go by Brody. So I don't know exactly. People change names because of the Russian army and other things. So Rav Elie Lapian was already a Zaken. He was 90 years old, and he's waiting for a bus in Yerushalayim, and the bus is 20 minutes late. You know, we've all been in there, and he's learning Mishnah. You know, people are looking, and he's learning Mishnah. He's just focused on the Mishnah, and then, like after 20 minutes, he just looks up from the Mishnah just to see if the bus is coming, and then immediately he looks down and he starts crying. He says, "I'm 90 years old, and I'm mashchis all of my midas." He says, "Why am I looking? L'may nafkamina? When the bus comes, the bus comes, and I'll know when the bus comes." And he felt even something ad kedei kach. He thought was a netiyah. He says, "I'm a mayred against the hadracha of my rebbeim." He said, and that was kind of Kelim.
Probably from Hebron, is he descended from this?
Yes, he may be a nephew, but he's descended. Yeah, that's
same name. Wasn't his name Simcha or something?
Simcha Zissel. He's named after the altar of Kelm.
Oh, he is. He's the same name.
Yeah, I have to trace exactly. Maybe it was his great grandfather, but I mean, the altar of Kelm was Nifter a long time already. The altar of Kelm was Nifter in 1898. You know, so it was a long time. Yeah, but he's the same name. Simcha Zissel Brody, Rashiv of Hebron, right? Right. Just like Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, people don't realize Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, his grandfather, was the altar of Nepardik. Because Rav Rafael Shmulevitz was a son-in-law of the altar of Nepardik. So they realize Rav Chaim Shmulevitz is so interesting. So in his mishpacha, he integrated Mir, because he married Rav Lezer Yudel's daughter, and Nevardik, and also Slobodka, because Finkel, Rav Lezer Yudel himself, is the son of the altar of Slobodka. So his two grandparents, his wife's grandfather was the altar of Slobodka, and his grandfather was the altar of Nevardik. So it's very interesting. And that was the Stipler. The Stipler's Rebbe was the altar of Nevardik. You know, so everything is connected in different ways. But okay.
I'm trying to understand this concept. We're talking about teaching on Chesedis versus Pidus.
Yeah.
As men, the Rav mentioned, we also have that challenge. How do women experience that differently, this challenge of Chetzelius versus Pinus?
Well, I think, number one, it tends to be more obsessive in the women's institutions, and number two, there's less tolerance. So, for example, a guy comes to our Sameach, the Derech Klal, the Rebbe is not going to tell him, but Dafka, you got to wear a hat. In fact, they may tell him not to, you know. So people are given a certain amount of slack and a certain amount of ability to pace it. With the women, you know, a girl is not dressed sanua, you know, she'll get kicked out of the school.
Right. Obviously, they have more instructions in regards to that. I don't understand. Do they experience the taiva to be more concerned differently than men? I assume they do.
They do. Well, they do. Again, it's a complicated dynamic, and that is, it's a delicate issue. I mean, the sexuality is a yetzahara that women have. Women want to be attractive to men. Now, in many ways, that's a yetzahara that Hashem put into the Bria, because that is how people get married, etc. But like anything else, the yetzahara to, you know, be sexual can cause, you know, these types of breakdowns. So there's a very, very strong image. Now, part of it is Hollywood, part of it is society. Part of it is we live in such a world where this is glorified, but part of it is also innate. A woman wants to please a man, and as a result, the Yetzirah can sometimes lead to inappropriate things. So that's part of what is going on. Okay, now the MS is, I guess, the MS is the one thing you need.
Like a Yeshivish environment, I guess they would never do this, but in theory, you know, people are educating women about this, should be talking to them about the cons of trying to appear sexually attractive to everyone.
Well, that's correct. And indeed, there are people who do it. Now, again, most of their talks are to Balas Tshuva. That's correct. And some of the mainstream from girls don't get this, which is very unfortunate. But there are, you know, there are, like, you might call specialist lecturers in SNEAS. What is her name? She's written a few books. What is her name? Gila Mandelson, right. Gila Mandelson is like the
Magic Touch.
The Magic Touch. She has like four or five books in this area. So she tries to convey the attitudes of SNEAS and the like. And, you know, she's pretty good. She talks to young kids. I mean, not young kids, but she'll talk to seventh graders about these things. She goes to the United States a lot and the like. So it is good that Baruch Hashem, like anything else, someone that is a balas tshuva or a baal tshuva, same thing with all sorts, you know, someone who has grappled with this, who has come from a secular world, is sometimes able to understand the Yetzer Haras more than somebody that was totally raised within the environment. That's why, you know, even in our Sameach, you know, we sometimes have people who come from mainstream yeshivas to hear Rav Gottlieb or something like that, because, you know, they're addressing issues that might not be discussed. Right? In Mir, you can't sit in a shir and say, how do you know the Torah? You know, you know, you're learning the Gemara, you're going through a Mairacha Rebbe Tivegan, and say, well, how do I know that the Torah was given to Moshe B'Sinai? You know, it's not really appropriate for the shir. On the other hand, you can have a Ben Torah that is grappling with that question. So, you know, he's embarrassed to ask, you know, call him an apikoris. So he'll sneak into our Sameach Shir and, you know, hear those discussions. So the truth of the matter is that this is sometimes the kayach of an institution that deals with a lot of people from outside of the mainstream environment, that they're forced to grapple with shilas that in the mainstream world either are taken for granted, or you're an apikoros if you bring it up, or whatever it is. So, but as I say, this issue of tznius, though, is a sore point even in religious schools. And let me point out as well, and here I think Rav Falk is 100% correct in bringing in Hashgafa, and that is, when you get too much into lengths and the like, you know, has to be the length, and I'll talk about some of the pratim in a few moments, but there's all other dimension. Again, I don't want to be too explicit because, you know, in a way, it's almost not sneeze to talk about sneeze in too many details. But the issue of tightness is a real, 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 real significant and important issue. You know, there are people who will have everything. You know, every skirt will be below the knee, and everything, every sleeve will be up to the wrist. And you can't point to a single standard that they're missing, other than the fact that if the begadim are so tight that they show off the contours of the body, in a way that's even a bigger avla than a skirt that's a quarter of an inch above the knee. And particularly in modern communities, but sometimes even in some Haredi community, you know, depending, that's a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous pirtz. That's called, the Yerushalmi calls it Big Day Shachatz. The word Shachatz is Gaiva, but Big Day Shachatz is the term for this. And that's a tremendous pirtz that people have. But again, you see, that is also a tight saw of the emphasis on chitzainis, because when you start giving, you know, rules, so people look for ways around the rules. If they understand the general hashkafa shebedavar, then they understand that even if something is not covered by a rule, no, zelo nachon, this is not the proper way to behave. Now, another complication in the laws of tznius is that women are supposed to be attractive to their husbands, and in many, many ways for character to be frumpy or, you know, totally not attractive. Chazal made many, many leniencies. Shalot tiskana isha al baila, to encourage a woman to be beautiful. And by the way, this is also a serious issue. This is a serious issue. Again, I'm not sure how serious it is in Eretz Yisrael, but in the United States it is serious. Where once people are married, you know, they care less about their appearance, because after all, you know, we're married already. You know, we don't have to impress each other anymore. But what happens is, husband goes to the office, where he sees all sorts of women, Jews or goyim or whatever, married, not married, whatever it is, who are very, very attractive, and they come home and their wife is not trying to be attractive. I will tell you that there is more than one case of unfortunate Rahman al-Islam, even things, affairs and the like, because of things like that. So it's a bit of a tightrope, because on one hand we have the imperatives of tznius, on the other hand we have the imperative that a woman should be very attractive for her husband, and it's sometimes difficult to accomplish both of those things at the same time. Yeah.
Does it include also a non-married woman in shidduchim?
Yes.
That she should look good, so
yes,
people should want to marry her.
That's correct.
That's even more common.
But what do they say? Yes, that's right. Good, but not too good, right?
So what do you do? She's supposed to dress attractive, but not attractive.
Well, what is the language? I think Gila Mandelson has the expression: attractive, but not attracting. It's hard to know. But again, I mean, the concept would be, you know, in theory. Listen, in theory, you might argue this: she's supposed to be attractive to a Ben Torah, right? So a Ben Torah will be primarily nimshach.
Okay, so she's just annoyed to attract all the Ben Torah walking in the street.
Well, no.
I'm just trying to understand.
She's not there that people in the street think she's to be looking at her. She is there. It's not like Chamisha Serbiyav, you know, that's a different issue there. Somebody pick me, you know.
She shouldn't cause you to look at her, but if you look at her, it should be...
That's correct. In other words, that's right. In other words, it should be that when there's a Pagisha and there's a single person that she is with, and it's close, you know, they're close together, they're sitting together, that there should be some capacity for attraction. But it shouldn't be. And by the way, I want to mention that it's interesting that Chatzchila, of course, Chasna should have Mechitzas and everything else, but we have Kama Vakama Edus from different Gedolim in America that they never had mixed dancing, that's Asher Mi'ikar Adin, but there are times they had mixed tables. And part of the cheshbon was they wanted single boys and single girls to meet each other.
Wow.
And they actually put single people at mixed tables. Now somebody was made that Rav Moshe Feinstein, now we know historically that Rav Moshe himself made mixed table weddings, that we do know. But somebody was made, now I can't say this is Edus Emes or Edus Sheker, that he was a Talmud of Rav Moshe. Now again, I don't want to say it's true. And Rav Moshe went over to him and said, I hope you don't mind that I put you at a mixed table, but I thought maybe you would meet a shidduch that would be matim for you. He was mayed that Rav Moshe said. Now, I'm bedavka saying he was mayed because I don't want to say that Rav Moshe himself said that. But this is what he said that Rav Moshe told him. Rav Moshe apologized for putting him on a mixed table, but he said, you know, Efshir, there can be a shidduch that way.
Well, what shidduch be? In the old days in yeshivas in Europe, did people make shidduch like they do today, where they're sat with people they didn't know, or they usually knew the girls first?
Yesh v'yesh. I mean, I think it was more or less similar to today, other than probably the dating today is probably longer. I think they still worked with shidduchim, with shadchanim. That's why we have so many tshuvas about demei shadchanis, right? There are all sorts of tshuvas about who gets demei shadchanis when more than one person was involved.
Today, like, just be a mikshal, knew that.
Yeah, so the question is what changed? In other words, we can certainly explain why that's not a good idea. The question was, why was it a good idea? Or was it a good idea? Like, what changed? Did we get more decadent? Did we get more parrots? Well, it could be. It could be that in many, many ways, as the Jairus get more priestistic and more openly and blatantly sexual, in which the street becomes even a bigger, you know, bigger sakana, in which you know, even ads on buses, you know, everything, the internet, you know, you're just suffused with all sorts of tina. So it could be, but dafka, you have to make more harchakas. In other words, that's kind of the way it works. The pasuk says, "Zel yumaseh asay likim," that when the kaychas of the ra get stronger and stronger, you have to bedafka go the other way. It could be, it could very well be. It could be that's why the Torah world is stricter in many ways. Now, people go overboard with the separate hours, you know. Is it in Ramat Beit Shemesh? They have stores that have separate hours for men and women. They have it in Yerushalayim. I haven't seen it here. Okay. Lakewood has separate hours?
In the main grocery store.
On Co-op?
And BGS, yeah.
That's crazy.
Wow. Yeah. Will they enforce it?
Not always. Man walks in. Sometimes they have separate hours. Not
okay.
I would make separate buses.
Yeah.
Okay, separate buses.
Like sometimes you can be on a bus squashed and it's terrible.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have separate lines. Like okay. Some grocery stores over here have just men lines.
Oh, separate lines. Separate lines, not so bad. You know, it's like it's kind of reminiscent of the, you know, they used to have it with blacks and whites and the Saturday. Separate lines, separate water fountains, and all these in Yanim.
What's the point of Sinias in general?
So there are two things. In fact, this is a very good question. Where does the Torah say, in fact, this is part of the issue I talked about, where does the Torah say a woman has to dress tsanua? So some learn that be'etzen, tsnius is not really a chiyav on a woman. Rather, the pshat is, the woman is like a lifnei iver. The woman is not allowed, those men, and really tsnius is a statement about the fact that men are easily sexually stimulated and distracted, and they have hirhurim, and there are halachas that a person should not be maharer b'arayos, especially when he wants to learn Torah and daven. So some say the whole chayvas tznius is a responsibility that women have not to be machshil men b'hirhurim royim. Now that's a very, very fascinating idea, because when you talk about that, some women say, why do we have the responsibility? If men cannot manage their Yetzer Haras, that's their problem, why should it be our problem? But still, if the Torah gives a tafkid for Anisha of Eser Kenegda, even though it's talking about a married woman, but in a sense, all women were given this tafkid not to be Gairim men, to have a Yerida and a Shivus.
Is it a chiyav on them or not? Huh?
No, it becomes a chiyav. Well, we say it is a chiyav on them, but the chiyav is not to be machshel men with improper hirurim, which is a fascinating thing. So when people say, for example, oh, the mechitza is a put down of women, not really. The mechitza is a put down of men. Because the mechitza is basically saying men are so pochistic that if they can look at women at all, you know, they can't think anymore. They can't think about davening and think about Hashem. Right? So really, a man can legitimately say, I am very insulted about what the mechitza says about me. It's not putting down a woman, it's putting down a man. But you know, that's emes. Now others say, again, in Hashkafa, you know, there is a chiyuv of atznei aleches, and the Torah wants us to be madgish, panimius, and not chitzonius. But again, that doesn't turn into a direct chiyuv. That, you know, you don't have anything in the Torah that says that. So at the most basic level, tznius is a form of lifnei iver, meaning to say the women have achrayas not to be machshil men in that way. In fact, Ad Kedei Kach, the Gemara in Shabbos gives a story, which is Vaday Nakla Halacha, but it's a story in which one of the Tanoim had an extremely beautiful daughter, and she was mispalel that she should die, because apparently, just her very mitzias was machshil people in different ways, that she should die not to be machshil b'nei Adam. Ad Kedei Kach. Now, as they say, that's lifnei mishira sadin.
Certainly, she died.
She did die. Yeah.
Is there another one that's taking care of meticulous about her steps?
Say again.
I saw like more where she's been. It's one of the time daughters.
It'd have been traveling, maybe. Yeah. And the Missile Strawberry is not an example of her steps.
She was taking steps, and in one of the rooms, said manoia or something.
Right. Like right. Yeah. That's another mindset. Right. Yeah. Manoia. See it. Right.
Where we see by walking men like Shaul Melech, and David was made fun of for not having Chanua. No, yeah. Shaul Melech was described like it takes work.
Yeah.
Like how is it met? Like how is it sneezed by men? Are women getting here for him?
The short answer is no. The short answer is that men are conditioned men are sexual. Again, this is an important you cite in Shalom Bias also. For women, the thing that excites them most is emotional warmth and friendship. physical things are not ma'orer taiva in the same way. Men are nisorer by physical. Again, these are generalizations. And women are nisorer by emotion. So a man walking around naked does not do the same thing to a woman as a woman walking around naked does to a man. So that's why there's less of an obligation on a man to dress tsanua in front of a woman than for a woman to be tsanua in front of a man. Again, that's the Bayre made it that way, that men are more visually stimulated and women are more emotionally stimulated. Yeah.
If a woman was, on an island, there's no one around, there'd be no fancy dress.
Yeah, yeah. So that's interesting. So meikar again. In fact, one might even. I'll even give you a further mashal. If a woman is among goyim, in other words, if the pshat is that the chayvas tsunias, women with women for sure is mutter, right? A woman can wear shorts and everything. She's in an exercise class with only women. Right, that's mutter. What about a woman with a guy, assuming there's no yichud problem? Again, the guy doesn't have these yisurin of your hurin and the like. So miikar adin it is mutter. A woman with goyim, a woman with women. However, al pi hashkafa, it's not such a proper thing, because if tznius also involves the notion of focusing on panemius, not chitzanius, etc., so then even if she's on a desert island, one should not be parsed. In fact, the Rama brings that even a man, right? A man should always feel he's in the presence of Hashem. Mm-hmm.
So
that applies to men and women. No, the only thing is, a woman doesn't have to be medayek on over the knee or under the knee, because Shavisa Shalagi Tamid is not going to be mechayev all over the gedorim of Sunia.
Just what would be normal in that situation?
It looks respectable. There's no sheer, but it looks like something that's not intrinsically mevusa. No. So we permit. I mean, we permit people to go to a beach. We permit women to go to a separate beach. We permit men to go to a beach. It's an interesting kasha. Why that's not a violation of shavisas on the negdi tamid? But it's called efshar b'inyan achar. Although now they make a sneis bathing suit. In fact, if you looked at pictures of 100 years ago, just even in general society, bathing suits used to be long sleeve and all sorts of things, and now they're bringing them back. Okay, but
on the beach, that's the normal.
I've seen nobody really that's mocking around it. I mean, assuming they're separate beaches with separate. The minhag is to matter it. I mean, even gedolei olam have if they've gone swimming, they wear a bathing suit. So I don't see people that are bedafka machmer that has to be long and mechusa and everything. Although it's a good idea, if I know this from bitter experience, that if you don't do this often, it's kedai to wear a shirt just because of sunburn, if no other reason. You'd be surprised you can get sunburned very quickly in that water if you're not used to it. Okay. Anyway, but it's not Asnias, it's only Asnias.
I mean, if you're in a town only going, you can hold your spouse's hand and stuff like that?
Well, Bapashtasiyah. Okay, but now let me go over a few practices. So I want to cover, I'm not going to cover all three today, obviously, but I want to give Rashi Prakim. I want to cover three basic halachas. One is married women covering hair. The other is chibuk v'nishuk, hugging, kissing, or we call negiyah. And the third is a little bit of yichud. Now again, yichud is ain was over so far. I'm not going to go into everything, just a few very basic things. Now, of these three, covering hair is the most unusual, because it is the only, also kolisha, but it is the only chayva of tznius that only applies to a married woman. Now that's a very unusual thing. Every other din of tznius, whether it's kol isha, whether it's yichud, whether it's chibuk v'nishuk, whether it's length of garments, that applies to all women, at least above a certain age. We'll talk about that. But covering hair is a miyuchadika halacha that only applies to a married woman. Now there are some rishonim that talk about penuyas covering hair, and other paiskim say that even penuyos, their hair should not hang long and unbraided. It should be braided, which is a bechina of certain smiyas in the hair. But it's a davar pasha that there's no chayvas kisui. Now that itself already raises an interesting philosophical question. I could say, well, a woman shouldn't have skirts above the knee because that's gairim hirhurim. But what am I going to say? A woman's hair is sexually erotic? Well, mimanafshach, if a woman's hair is sexually erotic, then the same way a single woman has to wear a skirt below the knee, a single woman should have to cover her hair. Elamai, hair is not erotic? If hair is not erotic, then why does a married woman have to cover? In other words, what's the nature of the notion that the hair of a married woman is called an erva? Erva means anything that's sexually stimulating and the like. So the emes is this. The emes is, the way this is explained, is it's a reversal of cause and effect. Meaning, let's take lavush, right? Let's say we say that a woman's knees have to be covered. So there, the way we started off is this way. Since the part of the leg above the knee is erotic, it is the eroticism that is goreim, the chayvas kisa. You're machasa because it's erva. With kisei reish, it's the opposite. Once the Torah is machayev you to be machasa for whatever reason, then if it's not machusa, it's an erva. Meaning to say, hair is an erva because of the chayvas kisei, as opposed to shaykh, that has a chayvas kisei because it's an erva. Meaning, does erva come first or does the chayva come first? Now, which means that the Torah did not say, of course, this leads us with a big philosophical question. The Torah did not say a married woman must cover her hair because hair is erratic. We don't know why the Torah said a married woman must cover her hair. But once the Torah said a married woman must cover her hair, so anything that is supposed to be covered is considered halachically erratic when it is not covered, right? In other words, it is the chiyuv of kisui that gives it a din erva rather than the erva, which is machayev, the din kisui itself. Now, based on this...
So halach is two reasons.
Say that?
Ends up being two reasons, halach, according to that.
Which two reasons?
Two steps.
It's two steps. It's
to cover the hair at the end of the day.
Well. Yeah. Once it's an erva, yeah. But the chayvas kisei is earlier than the erva. Okay. Now, based on this, we have two different sugyas about covering hair in shas. We have a sugya in brachas, not really a sugya, just one line in brachas, and then we have a longer sugya in maseches ksuvas. In brachas, all we see is the following: sar Beisha erva. That's the whole sugya in brachas. It mentions three things that are an erva: shaykh beisha erva.
Shaykh is.
Yeah, I'll get the shaykh in a moment. I'll translate. Shaykh means a thigh. Shaykh beisha erva. Kol beisha erva. Sar beisha erva. Now, keep in mind the following. The Gemara in Brachos is talking about what I called last week the Or HaChaim sugya. That is, there is a din in Shulchan Aruch that you are not allowed to daven, you're not allowed to learn Torah, you're not allowed to say what is called Devorim Shebikdusha in the presence of a sexually erotic stimuli. And Chazal are enumerating three stimuli that are sexually provocative that prohibit you from davening, learning, or saying the Shema. Okay? So the Gemara in Brachos is not talking about an intrinsic obligation for a woman to cover her hair. It's simply saying, I'm not allowed to daven, or learn or say brachos keneged three stimuli. Now, what are the three stimuli? Stimuli number one is shaykh. Now, here, there's a tremendous machlokas. What part of the leg? In other words, this is part of the woman's leg that is uncovered. That if I am facing a woman with even my own wife who's tahara, okay, no nafkamina, even my own wife, I'm facing my wife and part of her leg is uncovered, I am not allowed to daven, learn, or say a bracha unless I turn away. Now, what is a shaykh? Big, big machlokas. Many poskim learn that shaykh is the upper leg above the knee and above, meaning
including the knee,
right? So that is the makor of the idea that a dress has to cover the knee, and even when the woman sits down, so it shouldn't be megula. So shaykh is the upper leg, which means, according to that shita, which is actually the Chazon Ish's shita, if a woman's upper leg is covered, including the knee, even if the lower leg is uncovered, in other words, there are no stockings, even if it's a bare leg, that's not an erva, because the only thing that's an erva is the shok. The shok is an erva, but below the shok, which is below the knee, is not an erva. So according to those shitos, I am allowed to daven and recite Kriya Shema, even if it's not my wife or another woman, has bare legs, as long as the knee is covered. This is actually the psak of the Mishnah Berurah. Interesting, the Mishnah Berurah, who's normally very machmer in these halachos, the Mishnah Berurah actually says that shaykh is upper leg, including the knee, and below the shaykh is not an erva, unless he says the mina kamakom. See, that's where things considers it an erva. Now, the Chazon Ish says the other way. The Chazon Ish actually says that fakert, and actually linguistically the Chazon Ish has a very strong raya. The Chazon Ish says it's borer from many, many places that shaykh is actually the lower leg, because the upper leg, called the thigh, is called yerech. What is the difference between yerech and shok? Yerech is the thigh. The thigh is the leg above the knee. Shok, the Chazon Ish says, is the leg below the knee. So therefore, Chazal didn't say Yerech is an erva, although it's a kalvachomer. If shok is an erva, yerech is an erva. But if the idea is that the shaykh is an erva, that would even mean the lower leg. So according to that shita, which we're not knowing, but I'll mention the compromise, even the bare lower leg would be considered to be an erva migrina. Now this
first,
huh?
I thought there was a Chazon Ish said.
Yeah, the Chazon Ish, yeah. Oh. Yeah.
So
yeah.
The Chazon Ish says, so who said that below the knee, even if it's bare?
That's the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah says it. Yeah. Mishnah Berurah, yeah.
Oh, Mishnah Berurah is only in the lower part of the knee?
Below the knee. No, the knee for sure is Azasar. Now, here's the question. The question is, girls are always told that they have to wear stockings or socks that cover up to the knee, etc. Now, here's the question. Mimanavshach. What is the purpose of stockings or socks? Because if you're going to tell me that a stocking, even though it's form-fitting, is considered to be covering the leg, then let a girl have a skirt above the knee and have stockings. Now, we're certainly not going to matter that. Why? Because we argue, even though technically you're covered it, but if it's a form-fitting, that's ke'ilu, it's magula. So, if you hold below the knee, it's not an erva, you don't need stockings. And if you hold below the knee, is an erva, then the same way stockings don't help for the leg above the knee, then stockings don't help for the leg below the knee. So mimanafshach, it makes no sense to have a skirt up to the knee, including the knee, and then have stockings. You either have to have the skirt go all the way down, or have bare legs, right? Why are we mechayev stockings, right? So the answer is that miikir hadin, stockings make no sense at all, because you either don't need them or they don't help. You see, but elamai it's ke'ein apshara, meaning to say that miikir hadin we taka paskin like the Mishnah Brura, that the lower leg is not an erva at all, and miikir hadin therefore the halacha is I could read Kriya Shema keneged bare legs. But to be chayshesh for the other shita, we also have stockings. But because of this, it is brought down, or Shlomo Zalman brings down, that a woman in her own house, a married woman in her own house, can walk around with a dress up to her knees, with bare legs, and her husband would be allowed to daven and say brachos, that stockings would only be a heater in the street, because that becomes the minug and the like. But me'ikir hadin, the stockings are lo mile of lo mile, because logically, analytically, they serve no function, because they certainly wouldn't help to be a kisoy for an erva gomor. Right? You couldn't, like, a girl couldn't wear a miniskirt and have stockings. That would not help, because a form-fitting thing is not considered to be a kisui. And if it's not an erva, you don't need it, right? So miikir hadin, stockings is not required. But again, things become in hugim, and then you gotta follow them. Yeah.
Okay.
So according to Chazon Ish, it's above the ankle, that's where it begins?
Yeah, according to Chazon Ish, it has to be covered until the ankle. Yeah.
Where does this Mishmur get this from? I mean, Mishmur disagrees and says ever else in the Torah, Sheikh is...
Well, he brings from Poskim. He brings from Poskim that there was no chiyuv below the knee. Now, the question is that the Lashon doesn't fit. The Lashon doesn't fit. You know, we have Sheikh, for example, by Korbanos, right? When you bring a Shlamim. So when I bring a Korban Shlamim, I give the chazay v'shok to the kohen. The chazay is the breast of the korban. You know, the breast is here, and the shaykh is the right leg. And the Gemara in Chulin seems to identify it as the lower leg. Right. So there are a lot of kashas, but the minhag ha'olam is to follow the Mishnah Berurah.
Sorry, yeah. Just to clarify that. This Gemara is not mukar b'chiyuv, she has to come.
That's correct. It is very important to know. Yeah, I'll get to that. It's very important to know that the Gemara in Brachos is dealing with the Isurim of Kriya Shema and Brachos and Devarim Shebekdusha. And again, it mentions Sheikh. It mentions Kolisha. So again, the Gemara's mention of Kolisha is not saying a woman is not allowed to sing, at least that Gemara. It's simply saying, if a woman is singing, even if it's my wife, I'm not allowed to daven, say brachos.
The problem of being machshel.
Right, so then you have a problem of being machshel.
Same with yeah. The shaykh as well.
That's correct. Certainly a woman shouldn't walk around in a way that she disables people from learning Torah. Based on that Gemara, I mentioned we have two sugyas. Now one thing I want to mention though, that even with this Gemara in Brachos, the Gemara says here hurei tayra ar mutter, meaning to say the din that keneged a shaykh, keneged kol isha, and keneged hair, I'm not allowed to daven, say brachos, or learn. That is only bedibor, behirhor. It is mutter. That's why I had mentioned Rebbe Yashiv holds. Again, we'll talk about this again. I'm just beginning it today. This will take at least another 2 weeks, probably. Rebbe Yashiv is machmer, and he says a husband cannot sing zmiras with his wife because the kol of his wife is an erva that doesn't allow him to say zmiras, because he holds zmiras have the status of tefillah v'divrei Torah. Again, we'll talk about that. That's Rebbe Yashiv's chumrah. But Rebbe Yashiv says what he can do is he can let his wife sing, and he can sit and learn at the table, as long as he's not motzi the words from his mouth, because hirhurei Torah are mutter, it is only dibor that is usher. And the reason is, now that's Beferish, that's not Rabbi Yosef's chiddush per se. I mean, his chiddush is that he's machmer by zmiras. But the concept that all of these isurim are only dibor and not hirhur is because the whole makor of the idea that you're not allowed to learn or daven in the presence of erotic phenomena is based on the pasuk lo yira b'cha ervas davor, and we darshan ervas davor. Davor is dibor. When there's dibor, you can't have dibor keneged erva, but you're allowed to have hirhur keneged erva. That's why people sometimes raise the question: how are you allowed to learn on a bus when you have all sorts of women who are not dressed the right way? Well, one answer might be that if you're looking in the sefer is lav dafka enough. In other words, if I'm facing a woman that's not dressed properly, that's not, looking down is not enough because she's still in my range of vision, and it's very likely to look up. I would have to turn my face away, which maybe chilul Hashem. But the answer is very pashut. If you learn without dibor, of course, then the question is, can you speak and learning? But if you learn without dibor, then bichlal, there is no issue at all in this aspect of
tzniut. What about shmiya? Listen to.
So that's a machlokes. But we paskin that shmiya is not dibor. Shmiya is a form of hirhur, meaning to say, if you're listening to a tape or an MP3, so it's hirhur. It's entering your mind. You're not actively doing any dibor. So again, the Gemara in Brachos, it's very important to understand this, that Gemara in Brachos is referring to Amiras Devarim Shebikdusha. It is not referring to the intrinsic obligations of Tznias, and it mentions Shok, where we have a big Machlokas. It mentions Kol Isha. Now, although Kol literally means voice, but all the Rishonim say it's Zemer, singing. And the third is hair. Now, if you read the Gemara literally, the Gemara in Brachos does not say only a married woman. It does not say only a married woman. So you could have learned the Gemara that even Sar Panuya, but here the Rishonim and the Ramah brings this, speak out that it is only the hair which is darkai lechaseisan, the hair whose derech is to be covered because of the chiyuv of Kisei Harosh, and that is only by a married woman. So it's ungenomen, and it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. There's no chaylek bizman hazeh that this is only against married women who have to cover their hair. We'll talk about the Aruch HaShulchan next week. But here is the thing to keep in mind: when you have these three dinim, either shok biisha erva, sar biisha erva, or kol biisha erva, it even applies if it's your own wife. And it even applies if she is tahora and she's not a nida. Okay, let's take kolisha. I am not allowed to daven or learn or say brachos while my wife is singing, even if she's tahora, even if she's not an erva at all. Okay, it's very important to know. All of the chilukim we make between mother, like, we say kolisha, I'm allowed to hear my mother sing, I'm allowed to hear my daughter sing, I'm allowed to hear my sister sing Yesh Aimrim. All of those are general heterim. They are not heterim for Amiras Devarim Shebikdusha. Now, we're going to have a whole discussion. What is called Devarim Shebikdusha? That's where you get into Zemiros and the like, singing, benching. Okay, well, we'll talk about that term, but I just want to understand that you have to know that the list of so-called permissible relatives is not negeya this principle. This principle applies even for your wife and your mother and your daughter, etc., that there's an iser of devarim shebik dusha, but it only applies if it's dibor and not if it is hirur. Okay? But we'll see. Then, of course, we know the century, you've heard it over the years or learned it, that the Aruch HaShulchan has a special yisod, that Bizman Hazeh, since the generation is so porous in covering hair, you are allowed to say Kriya Shema Keneged uncovered. We'll talk about that. But Medina di Gemara, this is the sugi in Brachos. Okay. Now the sugi in Brachos once again is not intrinsically saying a woman. Oh yeah. One final thing. One final thing. Let me just mention that although they do apply to husband to a wife and any other woman, there is a difference. By Shaykh, there is an important difference. The Gemara says that for a husband, it is only a tefach or more that is called an erva, but for a man other than the husband, even pachos mi tefach. So that's an important chiluk.
For the hair? For
shaykh. I'll talk about, yeah, for hair might be different. For shaykh.
How does shaykh pachos or less? A shaykh is long, no?
No, that's correct. That's what he's saying. So how much of the shaykh is uncovered? Meaning to say,
for everyone else, it has to be less than a half.
No, the other way. Right, for everyone else, it can't be uncovered at all. In other words, that's what I'm saying. A man, I cannot read Shema keneged a sheik megula, no matter how small the giloy is. If it's 1/10 of an inch above the knee, I cannot read Shema. Masha ain kain, a husband, even if his wife's skirt is above the knee, if it's not megula a tefach above the knee.
Because by the knee, if it's a small amount, but it's across the tefach.
Yeah, so the shear is tefach al tefach. So you are correct. So theoretically, that's one square tefach. So theoretically, if you have a circumference around the knee, then even a very small amount would make it a tefach. That's correct. Or at least what, not the whole knee, but at least the part that he could see. You know, he can't see in back of him. That would be so. It depends if the slit. So if the slit is high enough, in other words, it's an area of tefach al tefach. So even if it's a slit by 5 tefachim, that would be a tefach al tefach. We use four fingers. I mean, we use the sheer tefach. So that's one chiluk. Now that's only a chiluk. It's only nogeya one person in the world. That's only nogeya a husband and a wife or two people. Anyone else, we're not mechalek, right? Now that is by shaykh. Whether that applies to hair, we'll talk about later, right? Okay. Kolisha obviously is not measured by tefachim, so it's not going to be nogeya that. Okay. Okay, we'll stop here.
If someone wants to be answered as a nish, so that a mid-length skirt is no good.
That's correct. That's
so
correct.
It would have to be down to the ankles.
That's correct.
So
that's
why
correct.
Are they so makbilating this in schools?
No. The reason they're makbil is because...
Well, Chazal says, I just said we said to the knee.
No.
The reason is because they just want to be sure. It's really a harfuk. It's a gezeira that it shouldn't go over the knee. They want to create a situation that no matter how she's sitting or whatever...
It's never going
to
go off.
It's really just... To protect the knee, it's a mina in order not to be nichshel in the shir.
Where does it come from? Not to look at women's hair. No, it's not from.